I'd be happy to do that, but you can tell that for yourself using the digital timer. All of the judges have read the briefs, and at least one of us has had an opportunity to review the record. So you may wish to focus your argument on the facts rather than the, on the legal issues rather than the facts, but how you present it, of course, is up to you. There's a toggle switch on the podium that you may use to raise or lower it to suit your convenience. You should also be aware that the oral arguments are recorded and placed on the internet. So if there's any confidential information, you may wish to be careful as to how you describe that. And finally, I would ask that if anybody in the courtroom has a cell phone, to make sure that it's turned off or on vibrate so that it doesn't inadvertently interrupt us during the course of the argument. So with that having been said, we're ready to hear the argument in Town of Erie versus Town of Frederick.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Andy Nathan, and along with Marnie Kloster, I represent the Town of Erie in this appeal. The Annexation Act provides a recipe for the procedure a municipality must follow to properly annex a property. The Act provides for three sets of parties who have standing to challenge a municipality's annexation if it violates the Act's requirements. Those are a landowner or a qualified elector, the Board of County Commissioners for the applicable county, and a municipality within 1 mile of the annexation who believes itself to be aggrieved. By including these three sets of parties, the legislature reached a determination that these parties could provide sufficient oversight to require municipalities to obey the Act. Landowners, it should be noted, are neither sophisticated regarding the Act nor frequently in a financial position to enforce it. And counties frequently have no vested interest in which municipality has an annexation right. And in this case, well, county was not interested. That leaves neighboring municipalities who are legislatively authorized to point out defects in an annexation by another municipality. Of these three sets of parties, municipalities have the best understanding of the Act and most likely have the resources to enforce it.
Mr. Nathan, what about the issue of third-party standing? Does the statute give a municipality unfettered right to participate if it is within 1 mile of the annexation?
Yes, Your Honor. The state legislature determines standing statutorily, and in this case, the court determined that Erie has standing because it is undisputed, it is within a mile of the annexation, and it believes itself to be aggrieved. Both of those are really undisputed, and it's the legislature who determines standing and any limitations on that standing. So we contend that Erie has standing to challenge any defects in the annexation.
So you're saying that the municipality can raise an issue that an adjoining or abutting landowner could raise? I take it, any issue at all.
Yes.
What if that abutting landowner doesn't want to raise it? What if that abutting landowner is perfectly happy with the annexation? And then that seems to put you in a position of raising an issue the landowner could raise but has deliberately chosen not to.
Well, but nonetheless, the legislature did decide that there were three sets of entities that could raise these challenges, and it didn't require proof of injury in fact for the entity to raise the challenge. It just said these are the three people who are essentially the watchdogs of the Act and can determine whether or not the annexing municipality has complied.
Mr. Nathan, what about the City of Greenwood Village case where the Supreme Court held that the doctrine of third-party standing applies in annexation proceedings?
Well, I don't think that the Greenwood Village case says that the legislature can't give standing to people. Third-party standing would be at odds with the Act, at odds with the direct language of the Act.
In not having third-party standing would be at odds with the act?
Yes.
But the Supreme Court in the City of Greenwood Village case specifically held that that the doctrine of third-party standing applies to a municipality. And it was considering constitutional challenges rather than a claim under the statute, but why would that make a difference?
Because, and we did make constitutional challenges, which we have not appealed based on the standing issue. But why would it make a difference is because there is no standing provision in the Constitution like there is in the Annexation Act, which says this is what standing is allowed. This court in Berry Properties versus Commerce City indicated that it's the legislature that has complete control over annexation and therefore the powers that it cedes to various people to have standing.
Although the trial court found that Erie did not have standing to raise these claims of third parties, it seems like the trial court addressed the issues that you would have raised or that the third parties would have raised anyway. So what issues would Erie have raised had it been allowed to raise the claims of third parties that weren't heard here? I couldn't quite figure out what they would be.
Erie raised all the issues that it had and wanted to raise.
And the court addressed them?
The court addressed them, but holding that they were irrelevant in some respects because there was no standing.
But we're still, for example, here on who owns, whether the ownership of Well County Road 5, I guess, makes a difference or not, whether the notice was proper. All the issues that this SMT would have raised if it was still in the case actually were raised and decided.
Right. And I'm prepared to argue all of those issues today.
Before you do that, Mr. Nathan, I have a question about the facts because I want to make sure I understand this in looking at the map. As I understand it, the town of Erie has already, or before this annexation, done its own annexation where it used State Highway 52. And so I'm wondering, and you characterize State Highway 52 as being within the municipal boundaries of Erie. And I'm wondering if the annexation by Frederick also purported to bring a segment of State Highway 52 within the municipal boundaries of the town of Frederick.
Well, they had to do that in order to annex across to get to the lower southern part of the section of land that they were annexing.
The reason I ask is you characterize in your briefs, though, as jumping the road, okay? And what I'm getting at is the legal description, and I haven't seen it yet, of the annexation, does it include the road as within the municipal boundaries? In other words, do we have a situation here where two municipalities are claiming that the same piece of property is within their boundaries?
And I think that your characterization that jumping is not an adequate description is correct. It's really crossing and or essentially annexing part of Erie's.
Right. So what are the rights of municipalities vis-a-vis these roads in terms of posting speed limits, for example? Do the municipalities have any rights to do that, or is that something that the state can do but the municipalities cannot do?
I think on County Road 52, it's the state that would post speed limits since it's a state highway.
So we don't really, even though on paper it looks like this particular segment of the road and perhaps this intersection of 52 with County Highway 5, County Road 5, is within the municipal boundaries of two municipalities, I'm just wondering about the practical effect here. Are there any opportunities for conflicts between the two municipalities regarding this segment?
Sure.
And if so, what are they?
Who has control over the accidents? Who has control over getting to the scene? Who has control over where people are located in terms of health, safety, and welfare and enforcement? Mr. Osterhoff, who is the planning director of Erie, testified about these issues at the hearing that was held on this case.
So, example, an accident occurs on this segment of Highway 52. Are you saying that you could have an officer from Erie show up and an officer from Frederick show up, and they both say, "This is mine," and nobody knows what to do?
Yes, I'm saying exactly that.
Okay.
I'll address notice first. The evidence is undisputed that the act requires 90 days and only 25 were given. And the evidence is undisputed that Frederick had notice of this, the existence of this statute through prior motions to reconsider. No Frederick town official could explain why such notice in violation of the act was provided. This is a question of law that's reviewed by this court because it's statutory interpretation and the facts are undisputed. The trial court determined that the 65-day lapse in notice was inadvertent. We contend that that turns the definition of inadvertent on its head, because inadvertent means unintentional. Inadvertent is where a municipality decides to annex and misses the statute because of a miscalculation or has some other mistake that they fail to comply with the notice requirements. Intentionally ignoring them and missing them by 65 days is clearly not inadvertent.
Mr. Nathan, didn't Mayor Doering testify that the failure to meet the 90-day period was inadvertent?
Well, I don't know if he used those words, Your Honor, but he did testify that he didn't know what the requirements of the statute are. But the point is that we've already given them a roadmap. We've already given them notice of what it is, and just hiding your head under the sand is not an effective way of making a claim for inadvertency.
Do you address the conflict that the appellees argue exists between the two statutes, the requirement to have the hearing within 60 days and the requirement to have 90 days advance notice if it's a flagpole annexation? I can't quite reconcile those.
Well, I think in this case what you would do, the petitions were filed in, I think, January. You would then work backwards. You would set a hearing that is more than 90 days from your resolution. You would then go back and have your resolution, and you would be then sending out notice prior to that.
And then the hearing is more than 60 days after the resolution,
but you could send notice after the petitions and then pass your resolutions. And that would reconcile all parts of the act.
If the resolution isn't passed, though, you've noticed a hearing, that's not going to happen, correct?
No, if the resolution is passed, then you'd have
not
your...
Not passed.
Huh?
If it's not passed.
If it's not passed, then
you've set a hearing that's going to have to be vacated, but you've given notice to everybody.
But nonetheless, you could also deny at the hearing the annexation, in which case you would have wasted your time, too. I think one of the purposes of the 90 days notice is to allow landowners to do their due diligence, to analyze the issues, to consult with attorneys and other experts, and make rational determinations about whether to join or fight. If you have 90 days notice plus 10 days to make a motion for reconsideration, the legislature has given landowners and the other people involved who have standing 100 days to consider this issue.
Mr. Nathan, could I interrupt you for an unrelated point? We can't see what time is left here. Do you have an indication?
No, I do not.
Ms. Harrington, can you tell us how much time is left? Okay, is there a reason why the lights are not working? Oh. Okay, if you could give us this. Did you intend, Mr. Nathan, we're not counting this questioning time against your running time, but because I guess partly because it's a new courtroom, things are not completely working correctly, but I just wanted to make sure that you were aware of the time, and if you intended to reserve time for rebuttal, that you didn't let your time run away from you.
I had hoped to reserve some time. That rarely works.
It appears that we have, before I started asking questions, about 3 minutes left. So do you wish to reserve any of that time or for rebuttal, or do you wish to proceed?
2 minutes, Your Honor. I'd like to have one more minute.
Okay, I'll give you the high sign after one more minute.
I appreciate it. Thank you. With reference to Frederick's cross appeal, it's a question of whether or not the two-day evidentiary hearing was proper. Frederick argues it was not because 106 is engrafted into the act. We argue twofold. One is that there was a stipulation for disclosures, discovery, and specifically for a two-day evidentiary hearing. All parties agreed to that. It was not until 8 months later that Frederick made the argument that we should be using the 106 procedure. The Annexation Act and 106 are really at odds. The Annexation Act has none of the procedures of 106, not a briefing schedule, not a record provision, and 106 is a quasi-judicial decision determination, whereas the Act involves legislative determinations. 106 provides that there must be no other plain, speedy, or adequate remedy. The Annexation Statute provides that. They have different time limits.
You have 2 minutes left.
Thank you. And wrap up, the Annexation Act provides for de novo review, a trial de novo, when there is no adequate record, and here there was no adequate record. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Hey, thank you. You have a minute and 35 seconds by my calculations.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome.
Please the court. My name is Cyril Vittergar, and I will be providing the response from appellee, the town of Frederick. The town of Erie has asked the court today for a remedy that does not exist under the Municipal Annexation Act. They've asked for a do-over. Erie would like a do-over because it made legally and factually flawed allegations in its motions for reconsideration during the discrete period when the Annexation Act permitted Erie to challenge the Yardley annexation by the town of Frederick. Erie wants a do-over because it made inaccurate legal theories, or advanced inaccurate legal theories. It advanced factually inaccurate dates with regard to historic title holders and the impact that those title holders had on public roads. Those inaccuracies did not represent competent evidence in 2007 to overcome the evidence in favor of the annexations, in favor of compliance with the Annexation Act. In 2008, Erie pursued a second bite at the apple. They tried to supplement the legal and factual shortcomings in their motions with newly discovered evidence, newly discovered information, broader legal theories, but Erie cannot recreate the past. Erie never reserved the right to amend their motions for reconsideration. And the window to add this new information long ago closed. The district court did not grant Erie a do-over. Instead, it found that Frederick had in fact complied substantially with the elements of the Annexation Act and that competent evidence existed in the record to support Frederick's actions. Erie is back yet again, though, hoping for a third bite at the apple, but it cannot undo what it didn't do properly 3 years ago. The Act only allows this court or any court in judicial review to look at the findings and evidence before the Board of Trustees of Frederick at the time it made its decision. It's not an inquiry as to whether it would have made a different decision had new or other information been presented today or in the motions for reconsideration.
Well, one of their points has nothing to do with new information, and that's this issue about notice. And there's no controversy, no dispute. The notice was not given to the owners 90 days in advance of the hearing, even though the statute says that. I know the judge found it was inadvertent, but can you explain to us why, if Erie called to the attention of Frederick that the first notice wasn't timely, the second notice wasn't given in such a way to meet the 90-day requirement, and why that was inadvertent?
The issue of the notice under Section 105.1E.3 is actually it's a moot argument, because pursuant to 108, which deals with due process notice under the Annexation Act, all property owners within 300 feet of the annexation parcel were provided notice of the hearing that was set before the Board of Trustees. Those same landowners would also receive this second notice under 105.1E.3. So this is the duplicative notice. And if the legislature, which has plenary power
to waive due process rights in an administrative hearing deems that it's appropriate to forgive completely the absence of any notice under Section 105, how can short notice create a cause of action when no notice doesn't create a cause of action or invalidate the annexation? It's a moot issue. The same property owners received notice under Section 108. The fact that they received 25 days notice under Section 105, in light of the conflict that we point out in our briefs between the 90-day period and the 30 to 60-day window to hold the hearing on the petition, it's a moot issue.
What is your response to Mr. Nathan's explanation to us just a few minutes ago that the two notice statutes are not irreconcilable?
I am not aware, and the town of Frederick is not aware, of any municipality that engages in the fiction of backdating or engaging in a type of no man's land where your petition is accepted, received, postmarked, and then not actually acknowledged for 30 days. And then 30 days after it's received, then you have this resolution acknowledging that the petition was filed, and then you have 30 to 60 more days. In my opinion, that would be a violation of the petitioner's rights to have a hearing within 30 to 60 days. If you engaged in a fiction and created an extended time period, that's not reasonable.
So coming back to what Judge Richman was asking about, and the trial court found here that the failure to give the 90 days notice was inadvertent. Is that conclusion supported by the record in your view?
There isn't any evidence in the record that shows that there was any intentionality or scienter, as pointed out in the briefs, with regard to providing only 25 days notice. The administrative process is very complicated in terms of providing notice, reviewing documents, making sure there are appropriate copies of maps, that the petition contains all of these elements. They're all set forth under Section 107. And I think their evidence, yes, Your Honor, does support that this was an inadvertent error, an inadvertent oversight.
After Erie filed its first motion for reconsideration, as I understand it, the resolution was withdrawn by the town of Frederick. Is that right? Early 07?
There were a set of ordinances, resolutions and ordinances that were approved by the town of Frederick. Frederick realized that there were some errors and took steps to repeal those.
Okay.
Prior to actually repealing, yes, the town of Erie did file motions for reconsideration.
But the repeal and the motion for consideration didn't relate to each other? Is that what you're suggesting to us?
Steps have been taken to repeal those ordinances and resolutions prior to Erie filing its motions for reconsideration.
Because of errors, you say? Because of errors.
Notice errors, yes, Your Honor.
Notice errors?
Right.
That 90 days notice wasn't given.
That's not the basis for the repeal that was of the first annexation.
Where's the record of the reasons why the repeal was effected? Is that in the record before us?
If it is, Your Honor, I'm not aware where it is. It's probably between exhibits 9 and 13.
Okay. And you're saying the problem was notice, but it wasn't the 90 days notice, it was some other notice issue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And we may find that in exhibits 9 and 13?
I believe that would be the area where it would be. Yes.
Mr. Vittiger, I want to go to my line of questioning, Mr. Nathan, concerning this apparent overlap in this segment of State Highway 52 and perhaps this intersection of 52 with County Road 5. Do you concur with Mr. Nathan that by virtue of this annexation, this stretch of road is now within the municipal boundaries of two municipalities?
Thank you, Your Honor. No, I do not.
Why is that?
Because the legal description for the annexation parcel complies with the Annexation Act's permission to ignore legal right or ignore public rights of way. So the legal description does not include any portion of State Highway 52. There is no opportunity for there to be a overlap in police response to any section of State Highway 52 relative to these two parcels. The only way that that would happen is if there's a joint or a shared service agreement between the two different law enforcement agencies. The bevy of harms that Erie has alleged are illusory. Okay, they are prescriptive. They are anticipating things that aren't likely to happen. Municipalities have intergovernmental agreements that detail how they're going to provide services to different areas. And when I say governments, I mean quasi-governmental entities like special districts as well as municipalities. The likelihood of there being a conflict, someone calling and saying, I need help, and no one responding, or someone saying that's someone else's jurisdiction, that's not a practical reality.
Well, I understand the usual situation is you may have that issue arise between different levels of government. You may have the state, and then you may have a municipality. Obviously, the state encompasses the whole state. The municipality is one little part of it. So you have some overlap there. But what I'm troubled by is this idea that we may have some overlap between two government entities at the same level. And you're saying that the legal description does not include State Highway 52. All right. Is that clear from the legal descriptions in the record? And if so, where is that in the record? Because your opponent disagrees with that.
Sure. And it's fair that he would be confused. The legal descriptions that are found for the annexation parcels are detailed in the petitions that were filed by the mayor, and I believe those are going to be by Exhibit 1. Thank you.
The bailiff just indicated there are 5 minutes left.
5 minutes left. Okay, thank you. In addition to these arguments that Erie has raised, for which it lacks standing, as was addressed by the court earlier, I think it warrants one comment, and that's that the act allows a municipality within 1 mile of an annexed parcel who believes itself to be aggrieved to challenge the annexation. This was acknowledged by the district court. However, getting to the door does not allow you to raise claims on behalf of parties who are not before the court. And I think the court was right to recognize that the third-party claimant rule applies here. And Erie was unable, as the district court noted, to demonstrate any justiciable harm to itself. And therefore, it didn't have any harm for the court to provide relief.
Well, Mr. Vidigar, let me follow up on that and ask you. Mr. Nathan was relying on the specific statutory language that says that a municipality within a mile of an annexation, if it believes itself to be aggrieved, may intervene or participate in an annexation proceeding. Why doesn't that override the doctrine of third-party standing?
Well, I believe, as this court decided in the Burthard versus Johnstown case, you may have standing to get to the door. You may have standing to assert a claim, but if you don't own property, if you can't demonstrate, you can believe that you're aggrieved, but if you can't demonstrate that you're actually aggrieved, there's nothing for the court to do. And in this instance, the district court found Erie wasn't aggrieved, and so there wasn't any harm to be corrected. In addition to these arguments that were improperly raised based on lack of standing, Erie raises a number of claims that are just erroneous interpretations of the act, including the duplicative notice that we talked about under Section 105. Erie also mischaracterizes the goals of the act by trying to attack de minimis irregularities in the petitions and the process itself. And they claim, for example, that there was no signature on the petition. And yet, as the district court noted, the signature was notarized. So the signature and the notary block were dated. Erie also claims that there was no address provided for the petitioner. And yet, the petitions included a cover letter with the address, date, and signature of the petitioner. They also included a cover sheet for the application, which included that information as well. And finally, Erie wants to advance the semantic argument that when the act requires a 3-mile plan to cover the area, the planning area within 3 miles of the boundaries of the town, that has to be called a 3-mile plan. Nowhere in the act does it require that. And in fact, uncontroverted testimony in the record demonstrates that Frederick did adopt a plan for the 3-mile planning area around its boundaries. It was called his comprehensive plan. It included other data as well, but it was maintained and updated with formality as a 3-mile plan.
Mr. Vidergaard, let me do a time check once again.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm just going to wrap things up and save some time for the cross.
Mr. Vidergaard, let me ask one question, if I might. Does County Road 5 bisect or divide ownership of property that's owned by the same entity, by any of the same entities?
I'm not aware, Your Honor, that any of the property, any of the the parties in this case owned property on both sides of County Road 5.
So SMT's argument was just that it owned property under or tantamount to the middle of Road 5, right?
SMT's position was that its property was burdened by this road.
Your position is their consent wasn't necessary because they really don't own Road 5. It's a county road owned by the county.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. Though Erie may hope for a different outcome on this third try, Erie's allegations did not and do not contradict the evidence in the record that favors the validity of the annexation that Frederick processed. Frederick did properly deny Erie's motions for reconsideration based on these incredible allegations that were in the motions. No right, privilege, or interest of Erie has been prejudiced or harmed or adversely affected in any manner by this annexation. And as such, this court should affirm the decision of the district court and uphold the validity of Frederick's Yardley annexation.
Thank you, Mr. Vidergaard. Mr. Nathan, as I mentioned before, you have a minute and 35 seconds for your rebuttal.
Speak quickly, Your Honor. First of all, the Berthet versus Johnstown case is inapplicable because Berthet wasn't within a mile of the annexed area. Secondly, it's not one defect. It's the cumulative parts of the defect that Frederick refused to cure after notice on the motion to reconsideration, which the court will note were detailed and specific. We still haven't heard any explanation from Frederick, in denying the motion for reconsideration where they gave no reasons, not at the hearing, not here, about why they failed to give 90 days notice, especially after they had notice from the motion to reconsider that's required. The affidavits upon which Frederick relied from the clerk that the Annexation Act was complied with were shown to be completely wrong, and the clerk conceded that she didn't know if they were right or wrong in any event. And there's no evidence in the record that municipalities don't comply with notice because of this conflict. Frederick says that the act is complicated, but Erie gave Frederick the roadmap for following in its first motion to reconsideration, which Frederick essentially ignored. Furthermore, the evidence showed at the hearing that it is normal in Frederick for an employee like the planning director to be responsible for compliance, but that was not done here.
Sure, Nathan, I believe your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan. Thank you again, Mr. Vidergaard. Thank you to you both for your fine oral arguments this morning, and I appreciate your bearing with us without the timing lights functioning this morning. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. That concludes the oral arguments this morning for Division 1, and the division will be in recess in the bailiff may so announce.